Welcome to episode number 6 of the Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about the foregut, midgut, and hindgut, fashion is danger, and we're going to dare you to Google image search some stuff.
Congratulations, you just finished block 2 exams.
Yeah, it was, it's nice to, like, I'm halfway through my first semester of med school, and that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I celebrated by snorkeling.
I celebrated by getting random bites from mystery bugs.
Mm-hmm. It's, well, we think it's an evil spirit, is what we're
Yeah, I was told that an evil spirit that may not like me in their sleep leaves their body and bites me. Or it's a bug.
Either or.
You know.
Yeah.
I had a dermatologist tell me that it was probably a bug.
I see where that would be.
I didn't actually choose to go to the dermatologist. I just ran into one. Right. I'm not that high maintenance, promise.
Right. Well, hey, let's start talking about the GI tract, yeah?
Sounds, I was trying to think of a pun and I couldn't. Sounds great.
Sounds great.
Go.
All right, so you know what your GI tract is?
Digestion.
Yeah. Do you know all the parts it has?
Well, there's in holes and out holes.
Yo, have you ever thought about how your mouth, all the way down to your
is
rectum,
one open is one tube and it's all open?
Yeah, like it's a giant. I mean, we call it the gut tube. It's a giant tube all the way down.
No, I've totally thought about this, and I think it's kind of gross.
It's a little weird. Like I always thought, like, what if you swallowed a string and waited? Could you have the string out your mouth?
They do that. Like, the Indian, like, South Asian mystic, like, Buddhist, like, yoga gurus, they totally do that.
Huh.
Eric Hedlund, my friend, used to have a book that we got when we were traveling together of people that would do this.
Wow.
And other random things that they would do, like, inhale the string through their nose and, like, floss their sinuses.
Right. Well,
it seems unhealthy. It seems like something you shouldn't do.
Probably not. Probably
like infection-y.
So that whole tract, or that whole tube, that's actually made from basically one source, but three different. It's made in three different parts when you're an embryo.
Oh, okay. Like when you're developing as a little baby.
Yeah.
How it gets formed is what we're talking about.
Right. We call it the foregut, the midgut, and the hindgut. And but the thing is, it all starts out as a primitive, we call it the primitive gut tube. It's all one big giant tube is how it starts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then it differentiates from there. And it actually,
like a worm?
Well, worms to me are solid. This is more like a straw.
Sure. You never dissected a worm? Anyway, keep going.
All right. Oh, I see what you're saying. That their tract is all the way connected. But that's also all animals though are going to be connected. But so it starts at the oropharyngeal membrane. That's on the cranial end of the fetus.
Oral.
So, yep. And then it goes down to the cloacal membrane, which is like the hind end.
Okay.
And then on the third week of development. So like in the third week of development, we're actually like. We're like a disc. We're like a disc-shaped embryo. And it's like it's more or less flat. But that is inside of a ball. That disc is inside of a ball.
Okay.
And that disc is made of three layers. Like there's a middle layer, a top layer, a bottom layer. And what's kind of really neat is that your gut tube comes from it's called the visceral mesoderm. It's a middle layer. Your gut tube comes from the middle layer. But all along your gut tube, it's lined by, you remember when we talked about epithelium?
When you talk about layers, are you talking about like you've got a disc and it's layers like a layer cake, or is it layers like phases of the moon?
No, it's like layers like a layer cake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
but
a
instead
top
of
layer,
you,
layer.
You don't understand what I'm saying. Like layers, no. Like phases of the moon.
Oh, that you're, yeah.
Yeah.
That there's a, so yeah, there's a top side, a bottom side, and then a middle.
Like a layer cake.
As
okay.
opposed to, like, you're saying layers, like, left and right go along the disk.
Like depth as opposed to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, this is like a layer cake.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so what's cool
Sorry,
is that the gut tube is made of the mesoderm, right?
Okay.
Is the middle one. Okay. But, remember when we talked about epithelium?
Yeah.
Okay. That's lining your entire gut tube.
Yes.
Okay. That comes from a whole different layer. That actually comes from the endoderm. So, like, the mesoderm makes your guts, and then the endoderm goes in there and lines it all.
Oh.
Isn't that kind of neat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all because it's, you know, specialized. And a lot of parts of the gut, like, they grow really rapidly, and so rapidly that sometimes it loses the actual tube part of it. That's just like a solid organ.
Okay.
And then it recanalizes later.
Recanalizes means reholifies.
Yeah, it gets a new hole again. And it's kind of neat, too. Like, as I'm learning about medicine and all that, all these embryology things, like, we can see the persistence of it as adults. So, the foregut...
Oh, just like when we were talking about holes in the heart?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the foregut, it all develops on its own as a section. And it goes from your mouth all the way to the first part of the duodenum. So, remember how your stomach empties into the first part of your small intestine?
Yep, yep, yep.
So, it goes just to where it basically dumps food into your small intestine. And that all comes from one section. Like, that's all developed
together.
That's
all the foregut.
Yeah, that's all the foregut.
As an embryo.
And it's kind of neat, too. Like, it also includes liver, gallbladder, pancreas. All that stuff is made at the same time out of the same material. It also means that it has...
Out of the same primal ooze.
Yeah, essentially. It also means that all that stuff has one branch off the artery that feeds it all. Or one branch off the aorta that feeds it all.
Oh.
Yeah, and, like, it's a pretty well-marked line, like...
That's, yeah, and that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, like, a ton of branches off of that branch, and, you know. And then the midgut, which we know all forms together, is from that duodenum all the way through your small intestines, mm-hmm. over to your...
In probably transverse...
Did you read that off the script?
No, I didn't.
You lying?
I am not lying, actually. I promise.
It does make it to the transverse
colon. I'm, like, learning stuff.
It's actually the first two-thirds of the transverse colon. It's a little weird how it splits, but the first two-thirds of the transverse colon is where it stops.
Why?
Because it does. I don't know why. I don't know if it has something to do with... So in development... The midgut actually leaves the embryo's body.
Oh, I remember you telling me this.
And then it rotates around 270 degrees and then comes
like
back
aliens.
In.
Like aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if it has to do with that, because what it rotates around is the supramesenteric artery, which is what feeds that entire midgut area. And at that point, you don't really have much twisting going on anymore. Like, after the two-thirds part of the transverse colon, you basically finish going across, down, around, and out the butt.
And then done.
Yeah. So it might have to do with not having to rotate so much.
Oh. You know. That's actually kind of illogical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never know. Somebody write in our comments if we're right.
So the last thing is the hindgut, which is what I just described, fed by the inferior mesenteric artery. Okay, so this is kind of weird, but your rectum, that ends about halfway down your rectum, right? Your rectum is kind of really interesting.
Well, your rectum has to do a lot of stuff. Like, doesn't my rectum tell me if I have to poop or fart, and if I can do that standing up in public or not?
Right.
Well, in a loud room.
Yeah, well, it depends on where you're at. Yeah, and what's
kind of
cool...
That's, like, kind of an amazing quality to me.
Yeah.
It's like... Nope, I am going to let this out of my body, and it's not going to be poop.
What's neat too is that, like, the tissue that's inside of there is the same as your skin. but only from the halfway point down.
Right.
And so all that blood and artery and nerves, all that control is a whole different ball game than the first part of it. And there's actually a very visible line. It's called the pectinate line, where you can see that tissue transition.
Weird.
Yeah. And even like the kind of nerve control that we use on it, what branches of nerves that it goes through, totally different. The lower part, this is a little side note, the lower part is the pudendal. Pudendal.
It says poo in it.
A lot of me studying is sometimes like me looking up what words mean to try, sure, and like make it make sense.
The etymology of the words.
Yeah, you know what pudendal means? Shameful.
Oh.
and the pudendal, like, vein, artery, nerve is basically what serves like all of our superficial, reproductive, and like urinary organs. So when we were studying, it was like, what innervates the labia majora? Well, it's kind of a shameful part, so it's probably the pudendal.
Sad.
Hey, we do what you got to do to make it match, though.
That's true.
Okay, so the other last thing that I think is really neat, or I guess two other things that I think is really neat, is the spleen is actually unrelated to all of your organs, all of your
guts?
Gut organs, even though it's right there, and it's actually fed by the branch for the foregut.
Is the spleen like a gland?
Is
like
there
a glandular system?
Yeah.
I honestly don't even remember what the spleen does.
Not a lot. You can actually live without the spleen. The major thing that the spleen, like, it does a lot of like cleanup work and a lot of immune system work and stuff like that.
Okay.
But the main thing that the spleen does, like embryologically speaking, is it actually is the site that most of your red blood cells come from when you're an embryo.
Oh.
And eventually,
and like as an adult, it's all coming from like your marrow.
Yeah, yeah. And
or
actually,
not even as an adult, but born. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of neat that it actually that tissue comes out of the wall, out of your back wall.
Oh.
Yeah, it comes out of the dorsal. You remember when we talked about mesentery?
Yeah.
It comes out of the dorsal mesentery. That's the tissue that it's derived from.
Okay, I've got a totally random question about embryology. Did they have to like dissect fetuses to figure all this out? How'd they figure this out? Do you know? Off chance?
No.
Quick and dirty?
Yeah, not entirely, but I would assume, yeah, that they dissected a lot of fetuses.
Like stillborns and,
yeah,
and miscarriages and,
yeah,
stuff?
I mean, like, that might sound gruesome, but how are you going to learn?
How are you going to learn? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, like, and learning about the origins of how bodies were created, definitely, I'm certain,
yeah,
helps you out.
Yeah. And so it might be gross to, or
sad,
offensive,
I mean,
sounding,
yeah, yeah,
or whatever to dissect a fetus, but like, if we don't do it, then how are we going to save future babies?
That's true.
You know?
Absolutely, 100%.
The other thing that I wanted to add that I think was really cool, because often kidneys get lumped into this category, is that they actually come from something called the mesonephros. And the mesonephros are more related to sex organs in the urinary tract than like the GI tube or anything else.
Huh.
It's kind of cool. Like, so real quick, down dirty. If you're interested in more of this, dear listener, flip over to the blog, because there's a ton of embryo articles up right now. But when you're an embryo, the mesonephros comes up. Like, it starts with the pronephros, which turns into the mesonephros. And then if the baby is going to be a guy, it makes the kidneys, and then it makes the male sex organs.
Okay.
The female also has a mesonephros. It makes the kidney, and then it obliterates, and a new paramesonephros.
What do you mean it obliterates?
Like, it disintegrates and goes away.
Whoa.
And it has to do with, like, a ton of hormones and stuff like that. Actually, like I said, I've got a whole blog article on this, and it's kind of really interesting, because we're essentially both, even though we have the genes for it, we're both born, or we both develop the same sex organs until
they differentiate.
Until they differentiate and they get pushed in one direction or another.
And that's why you've got nipples, right?
I don't actually know why we have nipples. But you remember in Jurassic Park when they're like, how do you keep them from breeding in public or breeding in the wild? Well, all dinosaurs are born female. They just need a specific hormone to make them male. Turn male.
Yeah.
We simply deny them that hormone.
Until it all went away.
Yeah. That's totally legit. Like, when I figured that out, my mind was blown. Anyway, that's
those are our guts. Sorry, yeah, we got a little tangential.
Yeah. All right.
Are you liking what you're hearing? Well, very soon we will be launching our Patreon account where you will get special access to more of what you're getting here.
Hey, Micah, what are you wearing?
Like right now?
No, actually, I can see because we're in the same room.
Gym shorts.
Yeah.
I have dirty feet.
Yeah.
Because I went to the beach.
Yeah.
I tried washing them off.
Well, you know.
It didn't go well.
No. It doesn't seem like it. No. Anyway. So this section is all about what clothes to wear. You know, we've talked a lot about packing and the stuff to pack. But I bet people are a little interested in what clothes to pack.
Right. Right.
So what do you wear to class?
Gym shorts. No, actually,
you don't.
A lot of people wear like shorts and t-shirts and like flip flops, and it's generally okay. It's like, I don't know. I think it's a little, what would be the word?
Too casual.
Yeah, a little chintzy or whatever. Especially the flip flops. Like, I've worn shorts a couple of times, but I also have like fairly decent sized calf tattoos. So I don't know how that fits into the culture yet.
In the literature that you were sent, they kind of encouraged you to dress a little bit more business casual, huh?
Yeah. But it doesn't really seem like anybody does.
Yeah,
that.
It doesn't seem. It's definitely not enforced. No, like you're going to get kicked out of class if you're wearing.
Yeah, I think it's probably there in the handbook, so that if something comes up, they've got it in print already.
Sure. So, but there are some times that you definitely have a dress code, and that's on wet lab days, right?
Yeah. So, for sure, you got to wear scrubs on wet lab days. And actually, even then, some people don't. They just wear their, make sure to button up their lab coats and stay covered. But to me, like, if you're going to be getting dirty, you should be wearing scrubs. And if you're not wearing scrubs, you're not acting like you're willing to get dirty.
Sure. Oh, okay. You know,
it's kind of dressing the part a little bit.
Wearing the correct costume.
Sure.
So do you have to have specific colors of scrubs or?
No specific colors, which is kind of nice. But like the lab coats we have to leave there. And
are the lab coats yours that you brought?
Yeah. Yes, they are ours. You got it for me.
Oh, okay. So it's that same one that I purchased.
Yes, it's the same one. The thing that I would...
And so you leave your lab coat there in the room, but you take your scrubs out.
Yeah.
And then...
And I actually bought lab shoes.
Tell me about the pros and cons of lab shoes.
They're not terribly comfortable.
Sure.
And you have to...
And they're kind of ugly. Like, I saw them, they look like Crocs. Sorry, listeners that like to wear Crocs. You know they're ugly, but they are comfortable. But these ones that you have are a little narrow for your feet, I think.
Yeah, but it's nice that they weren't really expensive. I don't have to ever worry about remembering if I brought shoe covers because people seem to forget to bring shoe covers a lot.
And you have to have shoe covers or lab shoes?
You have to have shoe covers. Yeah, and actually people like run over to the grocery store and snag a couple of plastic bags and tie them around their feet.
Oh my gosh.
Right? The thing I don't like about having the lab shoes is that we're not allowed to take our stuff out of the lab until the end of the semester.
Okay.
But they also don't give us a place to secure our personal effects that we're not allowed to take out of the lab.
Wait, are people going to steal your shoes? Like it's
already happened.
What?
Yeah, like there was a review that we're all kind of like filing in and out for, and it was my turn to go into the review, and I look around, my shoes are gone. So I walked over to the kid wearing them, and was like, "Hey, man, nice shoes." He goes, "Oh yeah, another student told me I could use them." Like, well, they weren't hers either.
No.
Yeah. So, like...
Because you can't get shoe covers on the island.
No, you can't.
Those are something that you'd have to bring with you no matter what.
Yeah, shoe covers, masks, gloves, all that kind of stuff is hard to get on the island.
Yeah. So, either bring an entire 2 years' worth of shoe covers or just buy shoes.
Yep.
Which, probably end up taking up the same amount of space in your suitcase.
Probably.
And probably end up being the same amount of money.
Probably, because we got ours for like $15. Like, we just bought cheap shoes.
Yeah.
They weren't terrible. If we're talking fashion, though, you know what I wish I had done differently?
What?
Packed less polos and more dress shirts.
Right, because you definitely try to step it up. So when I see you leave the house, you're usually wearing dress pants. I never see you wearing jeans. No. You're usually wearing dress pants of, you know, like khakis, yeah, like type material, and then either a polo or a button-down shirt with the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah. But what I like about the button-down shirt over polos is that it's thinner material.
Right.
So for someone who's always hot, especially in the Caribbean, a long sleeve button up is actually better than a polo.
Sure. And would you suggest people bringing short sleeved dress shirts?
Yeah, like I wish I had a few more of those.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
So that's kind of
good shoes.
Oh, tell me about that. Because we walk a lot.
For a class, it's not that big of a deal. But like getting to school and going to the van, or even like if we have to walk, sometimes we have to walk up to our car. Mm-hmm. If we can't bring it down the gap for some reason, then, you know, we have to hike all the way up there.
Right. Yeah, so now I'm going to talk for just a little bit about what I see people wearing, like more like street fashion, yeah, that I see around here. So there's a really strong British influence, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. And so the professional type people tend to wear really structured clothing. Like the men will wear, you know, nicely pressed pants and shirts, but then the women will wear like suit dresses or suit skirt outfits.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
That are very like pressed and structured, like a thicker material,
yeah,
as opposed to what I kind of assumed is like people would be wearing more floaty, cool fabrics.
Yeah.
Like people are pretty, women especially, are wearing pretty severe structured dresses.
Yeah.
Or suit type situations.
They look uncomfortable and hot.
Yeah. And then they're often wearing inappropriate footwear for doing anything but sitting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of high heels that I'm seeing around the streets, and I'm like, good for you. I can't do that. No.
Me either.
But what I'm like really enjoying seeing is the street fashion. Is I'm kind of wanting to do like a style blog. I'm not a very fashionable person myself, but I am seeing some super fly fashion, and that I think that the street style is kind of taking notes from what I see as like hip hop urban street style.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like some flair of Caribbean that I can't even put my finger on, and how that's a little bit different.
Sure.
That I'll see like traditional prints kind of mashed up with like cheap Chinese knockoffs and bright colors a lot. But cheap Chinese knockoffs that have been like hand altered, like cut up or like, you know, reconfigured in some way or another. Like, there's this guy that comes to the restaurant to clean the restaurant in the mornings, and he has this super cool plaid jacket that he's like cut the sleeves off, so it's like a short sleeved plaid jacket that just looks super fly. Like, he looks really cool. But then he came in today wearing a Santa hat, so I don't know. And a Knicks jersey.
That makes sense.
You know.
Yeah.
It's
seasonal.
And then there's the Rasta wear that the Rastas will wear. Me, personally, I tend to wear shorts. You know, I tend to wear kind of floaty shirts. I wear a lot of sundresses if I don't have to work. I actually tend to wear a lot of jeans still. But I would suggest to bring something structured and professional for if you have to end up in a situation where you're speaking in front of a group of local people, that they will see you in something that they identify as being professional for here. And then the last thing that I'm going to say is, like, if you're going to go out, to have rum drinks and dancing. People dress, especially the women, dress a little
unique,
rare. There's a lot of close fitting fabric on all shapes and sizes of bodies
And ages.
Yeah, and ages.
Yeah.
That it's some fashion that I would not go to church in.
Yeah. Just the thing I would throw on is don't bring flower shirts and don't wear like Benihana hats or whatever.
Yeah.
You can totally tell who's a tourist and who's not.
You can definitely tell when somebody's right off the cruise ship.
Yeah, right off the ship.
Yeah. So that's what I know about fashion. Turn to the left. Fashion. Turn to the left.
This podcast and a bunch of other information can be found on artofmedschool.com. Check back regularly for blog posts as well as worksheets and other materials that can help you in your med school journey.
Hey, Michael, look at that.
What?
Something I don't want to look at.
You got really sad right there. So I think this one is going to be kind of fun in a weird way.
It feels like clickbait.
Yeah, it's totally clickbait. I'm calling this section Things I Dare You to Google Image Search. Maybe not entirely safe for work.
Most of these you have not dared me to look at. You've just held up your phone and said, hey, Jen, check this out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what are you doing to me?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously I'm not, for me, it's so much of, like, it's really interesting and knowing the, pathology behind it or just, like, learning more about the body. I do like looking at some weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, my search engine history is totally odd. You know?
Oh, yeah. I don't even want
to
know what lists you're on.
So these are, I've only got four of them, because we're actually kind of running short on time this again. But four things that you should look up, because they're really interesting and really weird and kind of gross.
All right.
Okay. Number
Lay
one.
Them on. Number one.
Varicocele.
Varicocele.
It's called the bag of worms sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this only happens in guys, right?
Thank goodness.
The testes drain the right testy drains, the blood drains into the inferior vena cava. But they're actually formed like midway up your abdomen. And then they descend, you know?
Okay.
So it drains all the way up to the same level as like where your kidneys are.
So it drains in reverse. I was thinking of draining as going.
Oh, I'm saying, okay. So I'm saying the vein. I'm talking about the vein. Yeah. So it drains as far as like the blood is going back to the heart. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So the right one goes directly to the inferior vena cava. You know the inferior vena cava. Like that's a big one in your abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
The left one goes to my left renal vein. So the vein that's coming off from my left kidney.
Okay.
And it attaches at essentially a 90 degree angle. Okay.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me about this.
So
at a right angle. And so if it gets stopped up.
Yep.
It gets gross.
Yeah. What happens?
Do
you remember?
I only remember the phone.
Okay. So if something happens for that to get occluded, like that angle can get occluded, something happens to elevate the pressure, it could be like, you know, your veins have valves to keep blood moving up.
Yes.
Those can become incompetent for some reason. Incompetent just means that they quit working.
Mm-hmm.
So all that blood can't make it up, so it pools in the left testicle. Okay?
Oh, that's right.
On the side of the testicle is it's a whole like network of veins called the pampiniform plexus. So that like kind of crisscrosses and everything because you know you're using up a lot of blood there to make up the spermatogenesis. But all this drains back into the pampiniform plexus, and those get swollen up and distended, forming varicocele, or what, picture it in your mind, we call the bag of worms sign.
So it makes your left testicle look like it's a bag full of worms.
Yup.
How big does this get? I'm sure that there's no limit, but, like, are we talking about a testicle that's about the size of...
The thing is, like...
An egg turns into about the size of a softball?
No, the testicle's not changing at all. The testicle doesn't change at all. It's the blood around... The blood... the veins around it. So those get distended. But it's not like your testicle is getting bigger.
Oh, I actually think the one that I've got in my mind is the next one. The Medusa one.
Oh, well, this is like that, but it's in the testicle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go on. So this is called varicocele, V-A-R-I-C-O-C-E-L-E. I dare you to Google image search this.
Do it. You won't do it.
All right, so the next one comes from portal hypertension. It's called caput medusae. And same basic idea, but now we're talking about, we talked about the guts, right?
Earlier. Yes.
Most of your guts are going to drain their blood into the liver, but instead of draining to the heart.
Sure.
Okay, that gives the liver a chance to, like, clean it up before it sends it on, right?
Yeah.
And so it all goes into, it's called the portal vein, the hepatic portal vein, and that takes it to the liver. But something can happen there, it's like portal hypertension, to cause the blood to start backing up in the portal vein.
Okay.
Okay. It could be a number of things. That can lead to this cirrhosis and, you know, yada yada. Anyway, throughout your body, we've got backups in case this happens. So throughout your body, there are places, and this is just kind of in general too, places where, like, blood gets really, like, veins or arteries get really close to each other,
mm-hmm,
without totally touching, but they come from, like, two different routes. So if one of them fails, then the other one can pick up.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you're...
Like a detour.
Yeah, kind of. Like your pancreas, right? If for some reason it stops getting blood from the superior pancreatic artery,
mm-hmm,
that's coming off the celiac trunk, which, remember how we just talked about this being part of the foregut?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's another branch that comes off of the superior mesenteric artery, which is the midgut, that also feeds that.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we're talking about.
Sure.
Now we're talking about umbilical veins. So veins going around your belly button, which anastomose or can connect with stuff coming off your portal vein,
mm-hmm,
and then they get all distended and they stick out, almost like, kind of think of like varicose veins, but around your belly button
and like big and sticky out.
Yeah, like huge. And it looks like
your veins are like the size of my pointer finger.
Yeah. And so then it looks like all those veins are the snakes on
Medusa's head,
which is your belly button.
That's disgusting.
It is. Look it up. Caput Medusa.
Do it. You won't do it.
Okay. Next. This one is kind of sad for a lot of people. It's a birth defect.
Okay.
It's called omphalocele.
Omphalocele.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, remember how we talked about how your stomach, not your stomach, but your midgut twists around 270 degrees?
Outside of your body?
Yeah, outside of your body.
Like aliens?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so that all gets sucked back in. But what happens if that hole doesn't shut?
Leaking?
The body will, remember how we talked about sacs going over everything?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so the body will make that sac over your midgut, but then if there's a hole there, your stomach can, or not your stomach, but your midgut can, like, go out, like herniate. Are you looking this up right
now? I'm literally looking this up right now.
Okay, so O-N-P-H-A.
Oh, look, for some reason, it magically comes up.
You're not even on my computer.
I know.
So the guts go out.
Oh, yeah.
They herniate, But they don't retreat back.
They don't come back in.
You know, so they're covered with a sack, but the baby is then born with their guts on the outside of their body.
Oh, yeah, because these are all pictures of babies. Oh, don't do it. Don't look at this.
I think it's interesting. I'm not saying it's cool what happens or anything, but the pathogenesis of it. There's also another one called gastroschisis, which it goes out, but it never comes back in. So then it's kind of the same thing, but it doesn't have...
The sack over it?
The sack over it, yeah. Okay, then the last one is elephantiasis, which I think...
Isn't that elephantiasis?
Tomato, tomato.
Okay.
I think...
I cooked potatoes for dinner.
Oh, okay. You didn't cook dinner. We went out tonight.
That's true.
Rarely. Anyway, so again, it's... actually, I could have themed most of this stuff with, like, blood and fluid leakage and things, because that's what we're talking about a lot, I realize, just now. So as your blood travels through your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
It goes through the capillary bed, and then goes into the veins. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so as it goes through with so much pressure, it sometimes pushes the fluid outside of your blood cells or your blood vessels.
Oh, and just kind of goes into the...
Like in the interstitial space.
Okay.
So like people that have, take water pills that have like swollen up legs and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, what's the word for that?
It's edema.
Edema, yeah.
Yeah. So they take diuretics to help them...
I love her singing voice.
Right. So they take diuretics to help pee off some of that.
Right.
Okay, so there's this thing that can happen, and this usually happens in tropical places for, like, because it's a disease, or it's actually a bacteria, or sometimes it's a type of worm that causes this. But your lymphatic system has no, its job is to bring that fluid back to the heart, essentially.
Right.
And, then it cleans it and does stuff to it on the way. But part of its job is to bring that fluid back so that it can be reincorporated into your blood. However, there's no pump or anything for the lymphatic system. It actually relies on you moving around a lot to help move that up.
Okay.
Yeah. And you remember how we talked about vessels or veins having valves?
Yes.
Okay. The lymphatic system also has valves. They're called unidirectional valves because it only lets things
go one direction.
One direction, yeah.
Unidirectional valves.
It needs it to, like, fight gravity, right? So there's this bacterial or sometimes worm infection that can lead to incompetence of those valves. So, again, incompetence just means, like, it quits working. So now that those valves aren't helping the fluid fight gravity, all that goes down and then just sits in those interstitial spaces.
Sure. It's like edema on steroids.
Yeah. So here's the deal about this, though. Where that stuff sits is often a leg or the scrotum.
Not gonna lie, listeners. He showed me photos of this one, too.
Yeah.
And it's a ball sack that, as you're sitting on the edge of a bench or a chair, that your scrotum is touching the floor.
Yeah. Like, it kind of, like...
Like, you have to pick it up and walk with you as you go.
Yeah. Like, it's terrible. And like, even the leg ones are, like, all of them are bad, but there's so much... stigma that goes with it too, you know?
Right. And so many of the photos that you were showing me were from, like, circus freak shows.
Yeah, a lot of the old ones were. Yeah,
not the current ones.
No. And, you know, it's a tropical disease, and there's a lot of tropical places that just don't have good access to healthcare, you know? Actually, that was a conversation we were having
tonight. So, look this stuff up or don't.
I dare you.
Dare you.
I can send you photos if you want.
Well, all right. So there you have it. That was episode 6, where we talked about the midgut, the hindgut, and the foregut, as well as fashion and dressing in the Caribbean. And then, finally, 4 things that you may or may not want to Google on the internet. We hope you join us next week for another bevy of delightful delights. Thanks.
Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercada is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way with St. James School of Medicine. He just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.